Welcome to the Monogamous Marriage Podcast. We're Kate and Liam, married bisexuals a decade into our non-monogamous journey.
We've been having sex with our friends for 10 years, and we're still madly in love with each other.
We're also the authors of the Monogamous Marriage blog, where we've been overthinking sex and love since 2016. This podcast is the place where we process our sexual adventures in real time.
We are not experts, and nothing we say should be mistaken for professional advice. This show contains mature language and sexual content, so if you're under 18, it isn't for you. But if you're a fellow overthinker and you're not freaked out by uncensored conversation, you're going to feel right at home.
Okay, I've been looking forward to doing this for a while. I mean, not just the podcast idea, but telling our personal origin story in a way that's more permanent. So it's going to be recorded for posterity. This is something that we've done many times for individuals. Every time we have a dinner with someone new in the lifestyle, we end up telling the story of how we got together. And I think it's a great story and great way to start our podcast journey.
Of course, the most interesting part of our story is where we met.
That's true.
We met at church.
Yeah. So we were both musicians. We are musicians, part of a music program in a big kind of mega church close to us. And Kate was a singer and I was a bass player. And if you know anything about how bands set up on stage, you'll know that bass players generally stand at the back of the stage and singers generally stand at the front of the stage. And what that means on a practical level is that if there's a singer with a really great ass, then the bass player is going to notice, even if it's in church. And that's exactly what happened with us. I don't know if you've ever met Kate. Some of you listening to this podcast will have, some will not have, but she has a really great ass. And I noticed that right away.
Well, thanks, baby. Unfortunately, there was nothing we could do about this at the time because we were both married to other people, because I had also noticed your ass, by the way.
Okay, so how did you do that? Because I'm at the back of the stage and you're at the front looking out at the audience.
We weren't always on stage.
Oh, that's
sometimes
true.
We left the stage.
Right.
We had practice in advance and then we would have a breakfast before we went on for the big show. So
right.
At those breakfasts, I would frequently find myself gravitating toward you. So I like to think that over a couple of years, we got to know each other over coffee and muffins.
Right. So you were gravitating towards me from behind, which I think is...
of course, always.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we were both married to other people.
Yes.
So this relationship that developed was just a friendly, you know, here's a nice man. He's older.
Hey.
He's talented. He's attractive.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah. But there was nothing romantic happening between us, at least not that I knew, not on a conscious level.
No, and that wasn't happening for me either, because I was aware, obviously, you're very attractive. But the truth is, I see attractive women all the time at work, at the mall, and you don't necessarily think you're going to marry every attractive person you see. So a lot of things had to happen. And for us in the music program, they happened at rehearsals. There were some team retreats. And during those times, we got the chance to talk to each other just a little bit. I remember one time we were in line and it came up. I don't even know how it would have come up that I was an English major at university and you were too. Do you know how that even came up?
I don't know. I remember us sitting down eating muffins.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
there were a lot of muffins.
Yeah, that was a muffiny kind of church. And I think, you know, at other times I learned that you were a runner, which you're not really a runner now, but I guess at the time you were a runner.
I was trying hard to be a runner for
right.
many years.
Yeah, and I've been a runner off and on, but more on than off for, gee, it hurts to say this, like I'm saying 45 years now.
It's as many years as I've been alive.
Ooh. Yeah.
Anyway, we won't get off topic.
No, we won't. So we got to know little bits about each other, found that we had some things in common. But as you said, we're married to other people. So I'm just thinking, this is very nice. She's clearly an intelligent person, a compassionate person, nice to chat with. But I didn't think there would be anything more than that. But there was one time when we were in the rehearsal room and I saw this young boy, a 9-year-old, just playing the piano. And I thought, that kid's very musical. So I'm not talking about he wasn't playing like a young Beethoven. It was just the musicality he brought to his phrasing that really impressed me. And then this really pretty woman came up and put her hands on his shoulders and kissed him on the cheek. And I said, oh, so she's a mom too. And that's her son. And her son is pretty impressive. So that also went into the file that I didn't even know I was building about you in my mind.
Right. One of the things you didn't know about me was that I was very unhappy and lonely, married to a jealous, possessive, insecure guy who was very controlling. So eventually, after being married to him for 8 years, I told him I was going to leave him. And so during one of those early morning rehearsal times, we had kind of a prayer circle thing. And right. They always ask, you know, does anyone have any prayer requests? And I said, you know, I'm moving out of my house next week. My husband and I are separating. So that was the first indication you had that maybe there was the potential for things to change. But of course, you were still married.
Well, and I don't think, you know, you remember sharing that to the group. Frankly, I didn't take note. It wasn't till sometime later, I think, that again, we were having breakfast because that's what we did. And you said to me, I can't remember what came before it. I can't remember what came after, but you said, I have nothing in common with my husband. And I blurted out at the same time, I have nothing in common with my wife. And that was a real watershed moment for me because I don't believe I certainly had never said those words out loud to another person before. I may never have said those words to myself before. My kind of stoicism is heavily rooted in denial. And you may say there's a pattern there, but we'll leave that to another podcast. But I was the kind of person who thought, I will just stick it out. I can handle adversity. And even if the adversity is in my intimate life, in my marriage, I will uncomplainingly accept my fate. And that's the mode I was in until you said that. And then a little dam burst inside me. And I said what I had never said to anyone else before.
So shortly after that, right after I moved out, I got an invitation in my email from you. And
yes.
It was an invitation to an art show. So we talked a little bit about your art. And when I received the invitation, I thought, oh, this is probably something that he sent to maybe everyone on the music team or everyone he's spoken to about his art. And I'm not super interested in art, to be honest, but I was kind of interested in you. And I admired the fact that at close to 50 at that point,
right,
you dove into this art world thing relatively late in life. And I admired the guts of anyone who could do something like that, because I had been thinking about writing a book for a long time, but had never actually gathered the courage to start writing. So I recognize some of that in you.
Yeah. And you were actually wrong. I hadn't invited a lot of people from church. In fact, I don't know if I invited anyone else from church. By this stage, we had talked enough that I don't know what I foresaw for the future, but I was beginning to think that my future might involve you in some way. So I invited you out, and I remember that night at the opening, I had assumed you weren't coming because it was late. It was a great evening, but I had been hoping to see you there, and you hadn't showed up until maybe the last half hour you came in, but you didn't come in alone.
Right. Yeah, the pre-story there is that I had, in between the time I moved out from the home I shared with my husband and this art show, I had started to experiment with kind of dating my best friend. So we'll talk more about that later. But she and I were out for dinner in advance of this show. She was going to go with me. And we had consumed at least a bottle of wine and were feeling kind of frisky. We had had a threesome in the past with a man together, and it came up that we'd like that to happen again. So I called my ex-boyfriend and asked him if he would maybe be interested in having a threesome with us that night. And of course, the man said yes, rushed over. He was at the restaurant within 20 minutes. So I showed up at your art show with my kind of girlfriend and my ex-boyfriend, who I was later going to have a threesome with. And that was the headspace that we met
right.
in.
All details that I was not aware of at all.
So right.
No, my memories of the evening where you came in, there was one nude painting in the show and you really honed in on that.
Of course I did.
And so I thought, okay, this is interesting. That church lady, she's honing in on that. I didn't know anything about who the people you were with. I didn't know anything about them and what was going on in your life. But I remember distinctly having the feeling during the show that I was looking into your eyes and I was having an experience like you see in the movies where someone falls in love with someone else after a long buildup. So I really thought that was the case. And when you left, I thought something magical has happened. I later learned, and it's important to tell our listeners this because they may meet you sometime in the future and make the same mistake. If Kate looks deep into your eyes with a beaming electricity that seems to suggest she's falling in love with you,
she's probably not. Drunk.
She's probably drunk, or she may be on her way to a threesome. I think the combination of alcoholic and erotic energy comes across as a very interpersonal, intense style of looking at people and dealing with them.
Yes.
So, but I have to say that you'll often claim, yeah, that's all that was going on. But I know there was more to it than that. There was something happening between
this
the two of us.
This may be the only time in our lives when you were more emotionally sensitive than me.
You're kidding yourself.
Usually you don't realize until after the fact that stuff like this was going on.
I have latency issues with certain kinds of observations. But with that one.
It's like echoes.
Yeah, but with. Yeah, okay, we'll argue about who has more EQ, emotional intelligence, probably on every episode of this podcast, we'll have that argument, but let's lay it aside
all right.
for now.
Well, let me tell you where I first felt it.
Okay.
I got a follow-up email maybe 2 days after that opening.
That sounds like me. I wouldn't do it the next day. I'd play it cool and
You're
do it two
cool,
days
yeah.
later.
And
I'm not very cool listeners, but anyway, let's go with that. Go.
So I opened this email and it was an invitation to come do a studio tour.
Oh, yes.
So
classic artist move.
Yes.
Would you like to see my etchings?
Come to my studio.
Yeah.
So you lured me in with the offer of an intimate tour. And that was when I got a little clit tingle. I was like, oh. Probably he didn't invite everyone to his studio.
Right.
But I still went cautiously because it still very well could have been a professional thing. You thought, given how unattractive my ex-husband was, that he must have been rich. So maybe you were trying to sell me a painting.
Yeah, I don't think I would plead guilty if that was the case. I don't think I was thinking that way. I was definitely more tuned into the erotic romantic possibilities, even though I didn't know what that would look like. But I was just following my instincts at that point. And after we did the tour, we went to lunch. And at lunch, something really magical happened. And that is that we really bared our souls. We talked about some very difficult things. So I remember, you know, part of my emergence from an unhappy marriage was taking account of all the strategies I had employed to get through that on an emotional, on a life happiness level. And one of those was that I had affairs. I had two significant affairs during my marriage. And
of 26 years.
Of 26 years.
The marriage.
The marriage was 26 years. The affairs were a lot briefer. But they were things that I didn't talk to anyone else about. So there was only
certainly
one other
person. Certainly
not church people. Certainly not church people. There was one other person in my life who I confided that into. But otherwise, I was very quiet about it. But because I sensed something happening with us, I thought, I'm going to test it right away. I'm going to put this out there. And if she says, well, you're a disgusting human being, well, better to figure that out early on rather than after we're both more emotionally invested than we should be.
Right. And I responded in kind by telling you about the threesomes I had had with my best friend and my ex-husband, and then subsequently also with my ex-boyfriend.
Right. Now, I want everyone to notice what I confessed to. Not really socially approved. What you confess to? Really cool. Yeah, I have lesbian sex with my best friend and I have threesomes with an ex-boyfriend. But anyway, but it was sharing. And I get it that you didn't tell everyone about that for
right.
sure.
I also told you that I cheated very briefly on my first husband.
Yes.
So
Yes.
It was the second husband that I had the threesomes with no cheating.
Right.
This is complicated. Okay. So anyway, we left that lunch after an hour and a half of soul bearing. And at that point, neither one of us was unclear about what was happening.
Right.
I think by the end of that lunch, we had tiptoed our way toward talking about, could we have a relationship?
I think very abstractly. I don't think in any level of detail or even commitment to the idea.
You did say something very significant right at the end as we were leaving the restaurant. Do you remember what that was?
Of course I don't. What was it?
You said that whatever happens going forward, you have to assume that I will never leave my wife.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like me. So, yeah, that was very important to me, even in the affairs that I had before. I never wanted to be that caricature of the man who leads a woman on with a promise of a bright future or marriage just to get sex in the short term. And that was never me. I always made sure that I made that disclaimer right from the beginning. So, again, I'm not saying that to say that that makes me a morally upstanding individual. That's just part of how I made sense to myself of what I was doing, that I would at least be honest with people.
Right. And I took your honesty and said, well, that's unfortunate because I'm leaving my second marriage right now and I am not willing to sign up for more heartbreak. And I don't want to be anyone's side chick. So if what is happening between us is as special as it feels, I cannot progress knowing that I can never have you. I knew it would lead me to devastation and it would be foolish of me to sign up for that. So I walked away feeling like that's really too bad. And I had kind of resolved not to be in touch with you anymore.
But I broke your resolve.
You did.
Because we stayed in touch. And you know, it was during that time, it was such a brief time, maybe just a couple of weeks. But I went from thinking, even though I considered myself out of the affair business, the affairs had ended in heartbreak and I, for a couple of years before meeting you, had not gone down that path again. But I was a guy who, as I said, was committed to the martyr's role of staying in an unhappy marriage. And if I looked in my relationship toolkit, all I had was affairs. I didn't have anything else to offer you or even to offer myself in terms of hope for the future, hope for happiness. But within 2 weeks, I had come to the realization that this isn't the kind of woman you have an affair with. This is the kind of woman that you leave everything behind for and pursue with everything that you've got. So that's exactly what I did.
So within 5 months, you had moved out of your marital home and the rest is history.
Yeah, you've left out a lot of stuff there, but I get that we want to move on. So how about we just leave it there for now? If you like what we're doing here on the podcast, you might also like some of the other things we do. We have a very active presence on Twitter at monogamish1.
By active, he means we're constantly posting naked pictures, mainly of me.
We're also on Instagram under the name The Monogamish Marriage.
Well, I'm on Instagram. It's a place where I post my thoughts, poetry, quotes, and more pictures. It's basically like reading my diary.
We write together on our blog at themonogamishmarriage.com, all one word, and separately on medium.com under the names Liam McAdam and Kate Monogamish.
All of that stuff we do for free because, well, we clearly have a desperate need for attention. But if you'd like to encourage us, or if you're just plain feeling sorry for us, you can support us at patreon.com/themonogamishmarriage. We post original photos and videos there, including material that's too hot for Twitter, Instagram, or Medium. So go check it out, you dirty pervs. And now, back to the Monogamish Marriage Podcast.
Once we had gotten out of our marriages, it was obviously a really exciting time for us, but we had built our connection on a promise of sexual adventure, I think. Is that fair to say?
Well, that's kind of what we established in that first lunch.
Right.
I told you that day that I just recently discovered my bisexuality and was having sex with my best friend. And I basically said, I don't want that to stop. So any relationship going forward needs to be okay with me continuing to have this, girl-on-girl exploration.
Well, I think, too, that was super important to me because it was, I think, the reason why I got excited about you. So I obviously knew you were smart, You were disciplined. You were level-headed. You had a commitment to fitness, just all kinds of great things. But that sexual sense of adventure, if it wasn't there, I would not be pursuing anything with you, because I had spent 26 years with a wonderful woman who I was really incompatible with in many ways, but sexuality was definitely a part of that. And I was not going to sign up for more of that. So what you'd revealed about yourself wasn't maybe just an ultimatum to me. It felt like an important part of why I was excited about us.
Right. So maybe we should go back just a little bit to when Melissa, my best friend, and I first hooked up.
Yes, absolutely.
That's kind of an interesting story.
I agree.
People often ask when we got into the lifestyle. And I kind of say that my lifestyle experience predates yours because of this particular story.
And you had never heard the word lifestyle. You didn't even know you were starting the lifestyle when you started the lifestyle.
I didn't know what the hell I was doing. One night, Melissa was over at my house with my ex-husband, and it was a Friday night after work, and we had consumed probably two bottles of wine at this point. And she and I went upstairs. This was back in the days when computers were actually, you know, on desks and you couldn't move them. So we went upstairs to the study, and we were looking at something on the computer. And all of a sudden, she was kneeling in front of me. And she started running her hands up my thighs, and then she kissed me. And there was part of my brain that was screaming, "What the fuck is happening right now?" And then there was another part, maybe not my brain, maybe more my clit, that was saying, "Oh, please don't stop." So,
but can I ask you something? I've heard this story 100 times. Mm-hmm. How are you looking at a computer with someone, and someone ends up on their knees between your legs in front of you? Do you know how that happened, or that was part of her move? That was part of her making a move.
She was sitting on the chair in front of the computer, and I was sitting on the sofa beside it.
Okay.
She was actually on Facebook showing me some guy that she was interested in. So she was drunk and probably getting a little horny thinking about this guy.
Right.
And then she just kind of turned the swivel chair and got off and, was suddenly in front of me.
Wow.
So it felt really good. And we went to the bedroom. Now, keep in mind, my ex-husband is downstairs watching TV.
Right.
So we go into the bedroom. We keep kissing, making out, took off each other's tops and bras. And, there was scissoring and, lots of kissing. And
can I just say, this is what every guy dreams happens between best friends. And then at some point in life, you convince yourself, of course, that's only in porn. That would never happen in real life. But you're telling me
it really happened.
It really happened.
I think it probably happens way more frequently.
Wow.
Than you think. So so we ended up leaving our panties on and just kind of masturbating beside each other. And that was it for that night. So I said goodnight to her, sent her home, and as soon as she left, I told my husband everything that had happened.
Wow, you're such a dutiful wife.
I felt guilty. And he was downstairs. So I said, what would you think of having a threesome with her? And the man was jealous and insecure and mean, but he was not stupid.
Right.
So he said, we could try that. So the next time she came over, again, wine was consumed. This seems to be a theme. And the three of us went upstairs, and it was basically, she and I were together, and then in the end, my husband fucked me. So there wasn't much interaction between Melissa and my ex.
Right.
And that's how our threesomes went. I think we had 3 or 4 of them that way. And eventually my ex started getting jealous because he realized that I was more into her than I was into him. And shortly after that, the marriage ended. And then Melissa and I just kind of became an item, and we didn't put a label on it. We didn't call each other girlfriends necessarily, but we did all the things best friends normally do. Went to restaurants and art openings and raves and all kinds of things. But the difference was at the end, we would go back to her place and make out.
Right.
So basically we were dating for a couple of months.
Right. So now we fast forward to our relationship. We're together, and my memories are when we had left our marriages, we both went into different situations real estate wise. So I had rented a house for a year while I figured out my life, and you had rented an apartment. And I remember us being in your apartment one night and Melissa being over, And I'm assuming wine was involved again. I don't drink at all. So I also know that that was not a factor in my decision making. But the temperature was going up and up and up. And someone suggested we go to my house to take this to the next level.
Which is weird. I don't know. Were my kids there or something? I wouldn't have left them alone.
I feel like you did, though.
No, not possible.
But why would we leave your apartment?
I don't know. Maybe because you had a bigger bathtub.
I didn't know we were headed to the bathtub at that point. But anyway, that's exactly where this party headed. Because once we got to my place, for some reason, you and Melissa ended up in my bathtub. And I was sitting on the closed toilet seat. It was the only chair in the room. I was sitting on the closed toilet seat right beside you two. And you were having a really fascinating conversation about body image, maybe body hair too. So the complete antithesis of the porn threesome scenario, but it had its own kind of hotness because there was a certain level of sharing and intimacy for the kind of person like me who's tuned into that kind of thing and doesn't want some woman looking him in the eye and licking her lips in kind of a cliche of eroticism. That really got to me.
Right. It was just raw and vulnerable and real. So,
and sexy.
Yeah. So she and I just sat in the bath, washed each other, talked, and then we got out. And I think you and I started on the bed and she just kind of flitted about and touched and kissed and would go through, you know, periods of being more intensely involved. And then she would go off and dance and,
which is really her,
do her own thing. She's such a hippie.
Yes.
And, it was just this beautiful, fluid thing where I loved her and I loved you. And I was just in the middle of this lovely, fluid, sexual, emotional, blissed out situation.
Energy.
Yeah, it was really beautiful.
And so we had a few with her. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't have a question mark in this. They should be seared into my mind, but right. We've done so many things over the last 10 years.
Again, then, though, you never had sex, like you never had penetrative intercourse with her.
No, there was some oral sex, but, and some other fascinating stuff, but we'll get into that some other time, maybe. But eventually she met the man who would later become her husband, and he is a lovely, lovely person, became a very good friend of ours, but was not interested in the whole sharing lifestyle thing. So that was the end of our threesomes. And it was at that stage that you told me a frankly unbelievable story. And can you just go through the brief outline of what went on?
Yeah, it was actually my cousin. She started getting messages from a secret admirer.
Right.
And at first they were mild and she showed them to her husband and said, "This is kind of weird. I wonder who this is from." And to her surprise, because he was also a pretty jealous guy, he encouraged her to write back. And so for a few months, she had these exchanges with a secret admirer and she was convinced it was someone at her work who had been flirting with her. And they got more and more intense, more sexual. She kept her husband in the loop and he kept encouraging her.
And she's making eyes at this guy at work, right? Thinking, we've got this little online secret.
The secret admirer said, "I want to meet you at a hotel." Her husband said, "Yes, do it." So she got all psyched up, went to the hotel and went into the room. And who was there? Not the colleague from work. It was her husband.
Right.
So she was actually pretty angry because she had been, you know, mind fucked for a couple of months.
Right.
But it led to very hot sex between them. And it kind of sparked something in your imagination as well, that story.
Yeah, because interestingly, it also led to some real jealousy and recrimination. So even though he had encouraged it all along, her husband was very angry that his wife had done that, would sometimes use that information against her in fights. So I'm hearing this terrible story of deceit and dysfunction, and my libido gets one message: holy fuck, would it be hot to see my wife with another man? Isn't that crazy? But that's what I took away from that story. And so I brought up the idea to you that it would be great to see you with someone else, and could we make that happen? And we thought, who could we find? Like, we weren't in the lifestyle. We weren't signed up on any website. So you had an idea.
Yeah, I had an ex-boyfriend, someone I had dated briefly between marriage one and marriage two.
And who had showed up at my art show when we first had that breakthrough moment.
Yeah. Yes. So we had stayed in touch and the breakup had been amicable. I still found him attractive, but you know, we were not meant to be together.
Right.
And so he was the only person I could think of. He was single. I liked him and trusted him. I had already tested and proven that being in a relationship with him was not something I wanted for myself. So he didn't seem like a threat to you.
Right.
And so I approached him at his office and said, "Hey, I've got this crazy idea. Would you like to have a threesome with me and Liam?" And to my surprise, he said yes, because he had had threesomes with me and Melissa.
But that's two girls and one guy.
Right. The right. more standard threesome format. And he had kind of alluded to maybe having some bi curiosity, just with some of the jokes he had made while we were together.
That's how men do it, by
right.
the way.
Yes, yes. Silly things about wearing stockings and stuff.
Right.
So I thought maybe he'd be amenable to it. And turns out he was. So
yeah. And you weren't thinking amenable to a bi contact, just to having another man right. in the room in a sexual
yeah,
situation.
Yeah. Not being freaked out by another right. dick in the room. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he came over and I remember that night very specifically because, you know, after all this anticipation, Melissa, your friend, also asked if she could come along. So it ended up being a foursome, but in true Melissa style, she kind of flitted in and out of the action as she felt inspired. But Derek was there. And let me just run this down for you. Derek is older than I am. He's not in as good a shape as I am. He is a person plagued by insecurities. I love him. He's a great
He's very
person.
High stress.
Yeah. And I, on the other hand, am younger, in better shape, and generally confident in every situation. And I couldn't get to 20% of an erection. And meanwhile, insecure, out of shape, older Derek is just... The flag is flying high all night. He couldn't have beat it down with a rubber mallet. So I'm going through all kinds of emotions, all of them negative, except for my commitment not to show it to the two of you. So I just kept saying, yeah, this is great, whatever. I'm watching you. Fantastic. Way to go. And I have to say, Derek, super gentlemanly, he never made one innuendo to any effect that he was clearly doing better than I was. But I felt terrible. And the next day, I felt like, I don't know if I ever want to do this again.
Well, I certainly didn't want to do it again because I saw how upset you were. And I think we had been together for a year at that point, and I had never seen you that defeated and depressed.
It was really bad.
It was a very bad day. So I spent the day apologizing, and you kept insisting, don't apologize. It's not your fault. I wanted this. But I couldn't help but feel tremendous guilt that I had been even involved in this thing that hurt you so much. So I said, that's it. We're never doing it again. Experiment failed.
Right.
You know, we'll stick to women.
Right. But it's funny because even through all that self-recrimination, a little voice inside of me was saying, there was something really great there. And if we're patient, we will find something outstanding. And that's what we did. I convinced you to try another one. I told you that even if it went very poorly, I was resolved to having a more balanced approach to it. So not seeing it as a crushing failure, but just something that happens. And the second one wasn't great either, but it was slightly better. So for, I guess I introduced the idea of percentages. So now maybe I'm 50 to 60% of the best moments in that second one. And I clearly can see a trend line starting to emerge. So I convinced you eventually to do a third and a fourth, and then they started to get really, really good.
Right. So that was the beginning of a year to a year and a half of threesomes with him.
Yeah.
So our lifestyle journey started with two kind of long-term threesome partners. First, Melissa, and then secondly, Derek.
Right. We were blessed to have those people close to us. And I say blessed because they were friends of yours. You know, you brought a lot of things to the relationship.
And I brought them all on that first night to the art show.
Right. It was so...
It's like kismet.
It's like foreshadowing.
It's like dramatic irony.
Yes. Well, thank you.
No one on the stage knew what was going on. We love getting to know and flirt with new people. And our favorite way to do that is attending lifestyle events.
Our next stop is at the Podcastapalooza Encore event in Dallas on November 5th to 8th. If you read our blog, you know that the last PCAP in Miami was outstanding, and we expect nothing less from the Encore.
We'll be presenting a seminar on bisexuality for couples, and we'd love to have you join the conversation. The weekend is almost sold out, so follow the link in the show notes or check out the upcoming events tab at themonogamishmarriage.com for the details.
And now, back to the Monogamish Marriage podcast. I think the obvious question as we start the last segment of our first podcast is, why are we doing a podcast? And I have to say, I acknowledge that we are coming late to the podcast game. Like, podcasts were big news 10 years ago, and certainly lifestyle podcasts 4 or 5 years ago, those people were getting in at the early stages. But that's not us. We're not late, like in a cool way, like people who are into vinyl, and you know, that's very cool because it's decades after vinyl was introduced. We're just late, but not late enough to be cool. So I felt like at some point you were enthusiastic about this. Are you enthusiastic about doing a podcast, or do you know why we're even doing it?
Well, that was going to be my thing. Why are we doing this? So you talk about us being late to the podcast party.
Yeah.
6 years ago, we started a blog.
Right.
And we were late to the blog party
at that point.
If we had started a podcast back then, we would have been ahead of the trend, but whatever. So we've been blogging for 6 years now, and we've developed a pretty substantial audience. We've got 500,000 views on our blog.
Right.
We've got over 30,000 followers on Twitter. We already are into the community. We've spoken at Podcastapalooza. We're friends with all the podcasters. We've done the work. We've achieved the thing. I don't even know what we're doing here.
Well, I think partly when the idea came to me, it was because I felt we were speaking, obviously, to an audience who likes to read. But that's not a gigantic audience. There are a lot of people who only consume information about the lifestyle through podcasts, and we are completely missing out on those individuals. And it doesn't matter how stellar our writing is in the blog, they are never going to hear what we have to say. So I think that was the first idea that came to my mind, is that there's just a segment of people out there who are never going to hear us unless we do a podcast.
And we're so essential. Everyone must hear us.
I know, even as I was saying it, I know it's
there's some ego involved.
I know, but you know what? It's a given that no one gets behind a keyboard and writes a story or gets behind a microphone and does a podcast without believing that they have something to say. So there's always some egotism involved, for sure.
Sure. My second question is, what happens to our blog? Is the podcast going to supersede it? Or are we just leaving the blog behind, saying, all right, we've got 90 articles, that's done, close the book? Or are we going to continue to do both? And if that's the case, how are you going to build more hours into my day, Liam?
Right. Well, one thing at a time. My idea is that we are going to continue on with the blog, because the more I've thought about the podcast idea, and as we have explored outlines of potential episodes, I see that we can do things in the podcast that we cannot do in the blog. So our blog has evolved a certain style, which is we will tell a story and mine it for insights. Would you say that's what we do?
Yeah, we look for the lesson in all of our experiences. So whenever we have a new experience that we feel like, oh, we learned something new, then that's what we write about.
Right. But at the beginning of this podcast episode, we told our origin story, which, as I said, we've told many, many people. That's what we do on first dates, or even, frankly, at a party or a meet and greet. When you meet people, how did you get into the lifestyle? And we tell the story about meeting in church. We were never, ever going to write a blog about that. It's not what we do.
There's no lesson learned.
No. Well, there are lessons to be learned, but not in the same way that we generally do it in the blog. So I think there are things like that. Just looking ahead, I think you've had a really fascinating breakthrough with the Womanizer sex toy this year. It's made a big difference in our sex lives. We're never, ever going to write a blog article about that. It's just not the kind of thing that we deal with. But I think it's going to make a really great podcast episode sometime in the future, because it's not a little thing. It is a big headline news item in our marriage. So I look at those things and I think, you know, there's something to say. And every time we've done something new, so, you know, we started with a blog and then we started doing Twitter. And Twitter isn't just pictures that didn't make it into the blog. It became, this is going to sound too elitist, but what can I do? I'm an elitist. Sorry, I've never said those words out loud before.
So the truth comes out.
Maybe I'm going to strike those later. But I feel like we've been able to treat Twitter as an art form, as a different kind of channel that we could do different things with. And it allowed us to, I think we could take our best Twitter posts and photographs and you could compile them. We've actually had something to say and something to show.
Well, and the most valuable thing to come out of Twitter is the community we've become a part
sure.
of. Because we were writing in isolation for 2 or 3 years before we got on there. And then we just met everyone. And now we've got this wonderful community that we're connected to. And that's been great for us. Another thing that we started recently was an Instagram account.
Yeah.
And again, that's allowed me in particular another avenue to be creative and have an outlet for writing and for connecting with people. And each of the things, the blog, the Twitter account, and the Instagram account.
Not to mention the Patreon account, which we've also done very different things with.
Right. So they've all allowed us to connect with people, to share what we're learning, to kind of proselytize a little bit about the lifestyle because we're so enthusiastic about it. So I get that this would give us one more avenue to explore, but I don't know. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of time. And you know the truth? Now I'm going to tell you guys a secret that I've never told anyone before. We never fight, but the blog has caused more conflict between us.
That's true.
Than any single thing in our life. Not the lifestyle, not
nope.
fucking other people.
No. Nope.
Writing about fucking other people
yes.
has been the hardest thing we have ever done because we're both perfectionists. We're
right.
both very self-certain,
yes.
and we both have clear visions of what we want to do and how we want to do it, and they're almost never the same.
I know. It's weird. It's like the crisis of small differences. Like, I think if you charted our opinions about aesthetic things, we're very close to each other. But that tiny difference between what you think would be a good way to end an article and what I think would be a good way to end an article, they turn into, we don't fight. We don't yell. We don't call each other names. But the tension gets pretty thick. And even just planning this is really a podcast pilot. If you're hearing this, it's because we did a test episode and thought, you know what? We should get some advice from people and release this. So if you're hearing this, it means we did that and we decide to go forward. But before we turned the mics on, it was a little tense in terms of figuring out how we would prepare for an episode, how we would divide the episode into different segments. So you're right. It does cause some tension. So we have to be ready for that. We're inviting a little bit more of that into our lives. And why would we do that?
Why would we do that?
Because I think we used to have more tension when we started the blog than we do now. I think we had to go through a learning process in terms of learning to work together, because we have two kind of incompatible views of working together. My view is...
You do everything.
No. See, that's a mistake. My view is one person be the leader and one person be the follower.
And you always want to be the leader.
That's not true. I'm a really good follower.
What are you talking about? You're a terrible follower.
That's so not true. I am intellectually committed at the highest level to be a faithful, quiet foot soldier in the service of a leader I can believe in, and you're a leader I can believe in, no problem.
That's why you get the last word on everything, right?
No, because even when I get the last word, I always say, but sweetie, I don't want to have the last word. If there's something you want to add, add it. I always do that. I wish we had.
But we fight for 10 minutes before we get to that place. What I would like is for us to be equals.
Okay. Who doesn't want us to be equal? Do you think I want us to
not
be equals?
We're equals in our marriage.
Of course
we
are.
Why can't we be equals in our blogging?
Yeah, see, my idea is that equals means sometimes you take the lead and I listen and follow, and sometimes I take the lead and you listen and follow. That's what I believe. Anyway, but you have a different view. You like the collaborative thing where you're working together and negotiating every decision, and I find it tiresome and unproductive.
Like conversations.
No, conversations are different things. Conversations are, anyway.
The blog is a conversation. Anyway.
The blog is a conversation, but it's a highly artificial conversation. I think okay. We can both agree on that.
All so, right. But anyway, here, yes. Who's going to be the leader, Liam?
On any given episode that we're recording, I'm happy for you to be the leader to tell me what's going on. And then when you say, you know what, I'm tired of being in charge. Would you take over? I'll say, Kate, just hand me that torch and watch me go.
Well, we'll see how it all plays out.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm excited about it because I think the thing that's the most exciting is when we started Twitter, we didn't know we would be developing a network of relationships through that very simple social medium. And when we started Patreon, we didn't know that it would become an outlet for videos and that videos would be a big artistic endeavor for us. So right now we're starting a podcast and I don't know what the unintended consequence of starting this podcast will be, but I've seen this movie enough to know that something great is going to come. If we just commit to the idea, if we push past the difficulties we have at the beginning in terms of figuring out whose role is to do what, I think something great is ahead for us.
Well, I cannot disagree with the thesis there. So
wow.
I'll go along with yeah.
I didn't see that coming.
Write that down.
Well, it's recorded now. I don't have to write it down. Everyone heard it.
Yeah. And you said I could be the leader. So that's also recorded.
Yes.
Anyway, we'll do it. We'll try it and see if we can find enough interesting things to say. And if enough people want to listen to it, we'll keep going.
Okay. Sounds good. You've got a deal.
All right.
Okay. I love you.
I love you. Thanks for spending this time with us. While we appreciate you listening, ultimately, we're more interested in dialogue than monologue.
So feel free to reach out to us at any time at themonogamishmarriage@gmail.com or any of our other social media platforms for that matter with your comments, questions, or suggestions for future episodes.
And if you like what we do, we'd love to read your positive reviews on Apple Podcasts. If you hate it, there are lots of other amazing podcasts out there. Follow your bliss.